This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are scheduled to visit with the superintendent of schools for East Baton Rouge Parish, Bernard Taylor. He is almost 1 year on the job, and of course he has a big job with the public school system in this area, and he has some ideas on how to improve and enhance the system. We will talk with Bernard Taylor. Also on the show, a controversy about Vice President Joe Biden coming to New Orleans Saturday for a fundraiser for U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu. GOP Chair Roger Villery says the Vice President should stay out of the state. That's drawn fire from Democrats, including Melissa Flournoy, the chair of Louisiana Progress. We will talk with her and also hear from Republican consultant Scott Wilfong. All this, now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Richard Fisher is producing. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. You may reach us at inkstershow at wrkf.org. Coming in just a bit, we will hear from Republican political consultant Scott Wilfong and Democratic counterpart Melissa Flournoy, the former state lawmaker who's head of Louisiana Progress. They have differing viewpoints on the GOP chair's Roger Villery's call for Joe Biden to stay out of Louisiana. Villery is not happy with the vice president's stand on gun rights in America and says he's not welcome. He, the vice president, is not welcome in the state, and Joe Biden is slated to be at the Ritz-Carlton Saturday afternoon for a fundraiser for U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu, who presumably will be seeking a fourth term on Capitol Hill next year. So a lively discussion, I'm sure, will ensue regarding whether or not Vice President Biden is welcome in Louisiana. Now, there will be people from all over the world who will be in New Orleans in the next week and a half for Super Bowl activities involving the Baltimore Ravens and the San Francisco 49ers, that game at the Superdome on February 3rd. In fact, I'm sure the spillover will result in many hotels in Baton Rouge being filled with people, probably with various viewpoints regarding gun control and gun rights. And the city of New Orleans, I'm sure, will welcome all comers with open arms. This is the 10th time that New Orleans has hosted the Super Bowl. The first three were in Old Tulane Stadium in 1970, 1972, 1975, and then the last seven times, including the one coming in a few days, at the Louisiana Superdome, 1978, 81, 86, 1990, 1997, 2002, 2013. 49ers won in New Orleans 23 years ago. They beat the Denver Broncos by a score of 55-10. Joe Montana was still the quarterback of the 49ers at that time, the most decisive Super Bowl ever. And this one is expected to be much closer. The 49ers have been installed as 3.5-point favorites over the Ravens. The Ravens, the champions of the AFC, beat the New England Patriots to get to the Super Bowl 28-13 on the road. And the 49ers won on the road at Atlanta 28-24. So two road warriors will convene in the Superdome for the Super Bowl. And the backstory involves the coaches, the brothers, Harbaughs, Jim and John. Jim with the 49ers, John with the Ravens. And many are calling it the Har Bowl. New Orleans with 10 Super Bowls ties Miami with 10. 10 times the big game has been played in Miami, starting in 1968, the second Super Bowl. That one involved the Green Bay Packers and the Oakland Raiders, who had a player named Billy Cannon in 1968. In 1969, perhaps the most memorable Super Bowl of them all was played in Miami as Joe Willie Namath led the New York Football Jets to a stirring upset over the Baltimore Colts, who were 17-point favorites. The final was 16-7 in the Orange Bowl. January 12, 1969, Namath was all of 25 years old. He became a folk hero, and he never won another Super Bowl. Never won another playoff game, for that matter. But, of course, he became an icon like few people have ever noted in professional sports. We are waiting for Bernard Taylor, the superintendent of schools for East Baton Rouge Parish, who is running a bit late, and hopefully he will be with us in short order. And certainly, while we are waiting for him, it is a appropriate to talk about one of the big events in all the world happening in New Orleans. Now, 3 years ago in Miami, the Saints won on February 7th, and at that time, it was the largest television audience in the history of television to watch Drew Brees and the Saints beat Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts 31-17. And since then, of course, Brees has continued on a record pace as far as piling up passing yards. But the last year was a turbulent one in New Orleans as the coach and several others were suspended for the Bountygate scandal. And yesterday, the big news out of the Crescent City was that Sean Payton has been reinstated. The story from Sheldon Mickles in today's Baton Rouge Advocate reads, as he prepared to leave the hotel lobby Tuesday morning for the short drive to Senior Bowl practice, New Orleans Saints interim coach Joe Vitt received a phone call from an old but familiar number. Vitt hadn't seen the number in more than 9 months, not since head coach Sean Payton began serving a season-long suspension last spring for his role in a pay-for-performance scheme that NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said Saints players participated in from 2009 to 2011. But Sean Payton is back. He'll participate, of course, in the NFL draft activities. And as a result, the Saints will be whole once again. The question is whether it will improve the performance. They went 7-9 this past year, started out 0-4, got much better, particularly the defense, but still we're not in playoff contention in 2012. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. And hopefully Bernard Taylor will find his way to the studio. But Richard Fisher, who, of course, is also the associate editor of Tiger Rag, is with us. And in the past, LSU has had a strong contingent of players in the Super Bowl. Going back to Super Bowl I, when Jim Taylor and Johnny Robinson were on opposite sides of the field as the Packers and the Kansas City Chiefs met in Los Angeles on January 15, 1967. That one was 35-10, the Packers winning, and believe it or not, there were empty seats in Los Angeles on that day. The game's heightened in popularity, as we know. Tickets now are well over $1,000 if you wish to be among the faithful attending the game in a few weeks in New Orleans. But Richard Fisher, I'm thinking of Jimmy Taylor and Bernard Taylor. the LSU angle on this game is not that strong. There just aren't that many players who'll be involved come a week from Sunday in New Orleans who went to Louisiana State University, even though LSU is among the leaders now in the NFL with players who played in Tigertown who are on National Football League teams.
It's not. Ricky Jean-Francois, defensive tackle for the 49ers, being the only player in this game to have played for LSU. Now, of course, we all remember he won the national championship in 2007 for the Tigers in the Superdome. Now he's going for a Super Bowl championship in the Superdome just a few short years later. So not very many LSU angles in this year's game, and that's kind of rare when we look back to previous years with other players that have, you know, achieved Super Bowl glory. Several players from recent years come to mind. You know, it's just not going to happen for LSU this year, but there are so many guys, as you said, in the NFL with purple and gold in their past, and I'm sure we're going to see several more players in the Super Bowl in the coming years that have passed at LSU.
And, not this year, and we must note that in the past also there have been a number of players from Southern University and Grambling, but I can think of Mel Blount, who was part of four Super Bowl champs with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Louisiana, through the years, has had a strong contingent of players from state colleges, and also, as we noted last year, many quarterbacks who played collegiately in other places were born in Louisiana. The two Mannings, Eli and Peyton, they were Louisiana natives, both born in New Orleans and have three Super Bowl championships among them. Four from Terry Bradshaw, who was born in Shreveport, and one from Doug Williams. So Louisiana, with just 1.5% of the national population, has been blessed with a number of players on the grand stage in the biggest game in professional sports. And now we are joined in studio by Bernard Taylor, the superintendent of schools for East Baton Rouge Parish. Good to see you, Dr. Taylor.
Good morning. Please pardon me for being a little behind this morning. I was
you took over the job. Well,
in June.
So we're coming up not too far from now. 1 year. 1 year. And what's the early read on what you see in our schools in this community as far as the public education system?
I think that what I see is what I expected, which is, number one, having some very, very talented young people who want a quality education, coming into a community that wants that for its children, schools that have principals, teachers, other staff who care about the children and want the best for them. And with all the things that we have to confront in terms of state mandates, federal mandates, funding, new programming, all of that, work for a school district where people are up for the challenge, including with the leadership of Board of Education. So it's been a good experience thus far, and it's challenging. It has many twists and turns every single day. But it's certainly, this is a doable work, and I know that we're going to move achievement here.
You are promoting the concept of 8 new magnet programs. How will this work if you get your way?
Well, we're promoting more than just magnet programs. We're looking at how we can restructure schools, particularly those that are in the northern part of the parish, to look at what is the best way to give families choices in terms of being able to educate their children in a way that's closer to home. So what we want to do is look at a combination of magnet offerings, new grade configurations, gifted and talented programming, the use of technology, acceleration, making sure that students who need to accelerate can do so in a way that allows them, while they're still in high school, to earn college credits, and to look at how we really focus on job readiness.
And Lehigh will start in August of the 2013-14 school year with this kind of a concept. How will it work at Lehigh?
Well, I mean, it's looking at working with the community, looking at... Now, Lehigh is going to be in the beginning stages of its transformation. Lehigh School, the Board of Education voted last week to hire an architectural firm, and that firm is going to help the Lehigh community start to process what it wants to plan for once its new site is constructed and once the students take their seats here. We know Lehigh is going to be a dedicated magnet but also have a small neighborhood component. So we want to work with the Lehigh community, students who are there now, students who will be there prospectively, to look at what that building needs to offer in order for those students to thrive and prosper.
And you want all the new magnet schools to have less restrictive admission rules.
What I want is to have not restrictive admission rules. What I want is to look at how we make sure that students and families know what the expectations are, not only to get into a school, but to stay in a school. And part of that is premised on a belief that all students possess the effort and have the ability through their own effort to grow their own intelligence. So we want to state that up front so that people know what's expected, children know what's expected, so people can make a choice that is best suited to meet the child's educational needs and the family's needs for their children.
What will the rules be if they're changed?
The rules will be, for example, we're going to look at obviously what it takes to define academic success, what we want parents to do. And we're not talking about anything onerous. It may not be that you have to volunteer 4 times in a given year, but it's about making sure that parents understand what their role is and making sure that the child is academically successful. It's also looking at if there's an acceleration academy attached to it, meaning that through the use of technology, students will be able to take the prerequisite classes that student needs to take to meet their high school graduation requirements. We want to say we are going to work the student in a way that, but by the time that child graduates from high school, for example, that student has earned enough college credits for advanced standing.
All right,
those
hold
are the
on.
Types of things you have to say up front.
We'll return with Bernard Taylor after this 90-second pause on WRKF.
I am so sorry.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Bernard Taylor, the superintendent of schools for East Baton Rouge Parish, is with us, and he is a man on a mission, and he started in June of last year after being hired in April by the school board. And, of course, we know we have challenges in our school system. Before we dispense with the conversation regarding your magnet school idea, if these programs are put in place at schools that you envision as they will, what will the admission standards be?
Well, again, we're going to look at how we're going to look at the existing magnet admission standards, because obviously they've served the district well. But we also want to look to make sure that within those standards, we look at ways to maybe tap into students who have the potential to be academically successful but might not make the mark statistically, and look at how we need to work with those students too. But the other piece that I really want to emphasize to your listeners is how we look at engaging parents and caregivers so that they understand that their role is just as pivotal to the child's success as what the child does in class. So, but we want to do that in working with parents to find out, okay, if this is what the admissions criteria is throughout the district, what ideas can you give us about how we can enhance those so that we broaden the number of children who might be able to take advantage of the experience, but we also are clear about what we need families to do to make sure the child is successful.
The admission standards right now require what, at least a 2.5?
It depends from school to school. Some involve testing. There is a 2.5 grade point average. Obviously, there are standards of conduct, certain expectations about what students mm-hmm. will do academically, behaviorally, so on and so forth. And they serve those schools well. So it's not to say we should abandon those and try something different. But the other thing that we have to recognize is that the waiting lists for our magnet schools are very, very long. So it might require that we take another look to see, can we be more inclusive so that we can serve more children?
297-5633 for Bernard Taylor. Now, there will be a truancy meeting tomorrow, right?
Yes, sir.
Involving the DA and the sheriff and the police chief and you. So what do you hope to accomplish with this?
Well, this is one of the most unique partnerships, certainly, that I've been party to, where you have the mayor's office, the district attorney, the county sheriff's office, and the school district all working together to attack a common problem, which is truancy. And I think by having this meeting, we're going to not only talk about what the problem is, but how it's being addressed and what we need to do to make sure that the efforts that are in place are, in fact, reducing the amount of truancy. I read a report where the high school dropout rate across the country is dropping. So clearly efforts like this are very, very important if we want to continue what is a good trend in students persisting to get a high school diploma.
How significant is that challenge in this community?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, it is significant because we have a number of children who, for example, are overage because of how they've performed on the LEAP test. And my concern is that in looking at that population, that might be a population that through no fault of the children may age out before they could get a high school diploma. So we've got to look at that phenomenon and address it so that we're not, by complying with the law, creating the potential for a dropout population. The other thing, again, is working with families to look at what their issues are, and if there are impediments that the family is experiencing that affects a child's attendance, that we work holistically with that family to make sure that children are in school all the time.
Noel at LSU. Good morning, Noel. You're on with Bernard Taylor.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Superintendent.
Dr. Hammett, how is it that you were able to get through as the first caller? You must have some kind of connections here. How are you this morning?
Well, I'm doing fine. It's not Doctor. It's just Noel. And I have a question, and it concerns stability. One of the things that we've seen with the state takeovers, we've had, you know, as you know, the overcrowding in a lot of the middle schools. And we've had a lot of schools having to shift students around, especially as they leave the recovery school district and come back to your district. My question is, with all of the talk of changing and magnets and new zone changes, how does that help parents with their questions of stability? I watched a lot of parents go to the State Department of Education and beg the state not to take Capitol High School. They lost their local school. They lost their history. How do you deal with that question of stability for families who have finally feel like they have a local school and now they're being told they might lose that school to a magnet program?
Well, one of the things that we've been able to come to an agreement with the Recovery School District is how schools, for example, like Capitol High School, will become part of ER's portfolio of choices. We are currently working with the Recovery School District on a dual track. Now, they are going to issue a request for applicants for charter operators, as is the district. Now, if the district is successful and we come to agreement with the Recovery School District as to an appropriate charter operator, the school would operate as a district-sponsored charter school. The other piece to this is that through this arrangement, the Recovery School District has agreed to factor in legacy costs in determining the available resources that would be there for the school to operate. The district would then, through this arrangement as a district-sponsored charter school, work with the parents, other community stakeholders, the Recovery School District, the charter operator, to make this a neighborhood option for the students who would attend Capitol High School if it were a quote-unquote traditional EBR high school. So because of this new arrangement, I think the stability that families can look for is that students will be working within within the jurisdiction of the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board, albeit it may be with the district sponsoring a charter school. But again, we can offer to families a menu of options within their attendance, within their family of schools, because we're moving away from attendance region. And I hope that that will ensure families feel that once they enter a child in kindergarten, they will know from kindergarten, elementary school, middle school, and high school, they know where their child will attend.
Now, you were, before arriving here, were the superintendent of schools in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
That's correct.
How long were you there?
I was there from July of 2006 to June of 2012.
To June, you were superintendent when you left to come here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
How was that experience as far as being applicable to the one you have now?
The exact same. The achievement climate there was similar to that in East Baton Rouge. Financially, the state of Michigan was going through the throes of really being impacted by the economic downturn. So this is a school district, Grand Rapids, where they were experiencing declining enrollment, declining resources. The district was achievement challenged. And so on a smaller scale, because Grand Rapids, certainly at the time that I was there, was about 20,000 students, about 18,500. So while it was smaller in scale, the problems were very, very similar to what we're experiencing here in East Baton Rouge.
And what we have, 43,000 students here. You had how many there?
Again, when I started, it was about over 20,000. When I left, it was about 18,500.
Okay, so this is a bigger district.
Well, I mean, it's a bigger district in terms of the number of students and the geographical boundaries, but the problems are exactly the same.
Now, when you were hired, it said you were the former superintendent of Grand Rapids.
I was on a study leave. I actually started my study leave in January of 2012.
Okay. So you left in January, not in June.
Well, I was still on the payroll until June of 2012. So, yes, I left in January.
Okay. Well, we thank you for joining us today. Obviously, you have a difficult job, and we wish you well.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and it was a pleasure, and I'll be happy to come back at any other time.
Okay. Thank you, Superintendent.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
All right.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757. Those are your numbers, and we switch gears and the Vice President of the United States is heading to Louisiana in a few days. He'll be in New Orleans for a fundraiser for U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu. Now, ordinarily, this kind of an event might not even gain much attention. But yesterday, the chairman of the Louisiana GOP, Roger Villery, issued a press release saying On January 26, President Obama's point man for gun control, Vice President Joe Biden, will be in New Orleans to raise money for Senator Landrieu's reelection campaign. Republican Party Chair Roger Villery is calling on Senator Landrieu to cancel the Biden event in light of the vice president's crusade to violate the U.S. Constitution. Here's a quote. It says, Senator Landrieu's plan to hold an event in Louisiana featuring gun-grabbing Joe Biden is a slap in the face to every Louisiana citizen who believes in the U.S. Constitution. I call on Senator Landrieu to cancel this event and to inform Mr. Biden that he's not welcome in Louisiana, where we still support the rule of law. And it goes on from there, and I'll just note that Roger Villery says Landrieu, Senator Landrieu, currently has a C rating with the National Rifle Association and has previously supported anti-gun measures. Ms. Landrieu's C rating, writes Roger Villery, stands for completely unacceptable. The battle lines are drawn, and with us to talk about it are Republican political consultant Scott Wilfong, who is a close associate of Chairman Villery, and Melissa Flournoy of Louisiana Progress. Melissa, what's your take on the vice president coming to Louisiana and the admonition from the chair of the Louisiana GOP for Joe Biden to stay the heck out of the Bayou State?
Well, I just really want to thank Chairman Villery for helping promote the event with the vice president. I think this is really going to help Senator Landrieu's fundraising. And I think there are still tickets available if you go to marylandrieu.com. So I'm just thrilled to death that Chairman Villery released this press release. And, you know, I think it's just the sort of crazy Republican Party stuff that helps the Democrats. So bring it on.
Well, your enthusiasm has not been equaled by Karen Carter Peterson, the chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. She has responded vigorously, saying Louisiana has hosted presidents and vice presidents of the U.S. of both parties and has always made them feel welcome, regardless of people's views on different subjects of importance. It would be a sad day for such a respected and distinguished person as Vice President Joe Biden to feel unwelcome in our state, particularly after all this administration has done to help the people of Louisiana. Scott,
oh, well, I agree with Karen completely, and I just think it's outrageous. I was shocked to see this press release. It was just incredibly disrespectful and almost downright silly.
Well, you know, Jim, thanks for having me on. I would just say I think what's disrespectful is Mary Landrieu continually attempting to be this moderate Democrat that she claims to be, but yet voting for the most liberal, extreme, wacko left agendas like Obamacare, like gun grabs. And I think this is exactly what the people need to see is let's call her out on it. You want the money. You want all the attention that the vice president's going to bring you. And then in, you know, a year from right now, she's going to be in full reelection mode. So I think when 80% of the people in this state passed the constitutional amendment to give us the strongest gun rights in the nation, Mary Landrieu needs to answer for why she wants gun-grabbing Joe Biden to be her point man down here and to help her raise the money. She wants the money, but she wants to be seen as a moderate that represents Louisianians. But that's
Why is he off target on his stance on gun rights?
For one example, he was the first person out the door to give the idea that President Obama may use executive orders to ban certain firearms, to ban magazines, things clearly outside of his duties as president, his powers as president. But for Joe Biden, that's a great idea. Let's just use executive authority to seize our citizens' rights.
So would you say the same thing if the president of the United States were visiting New Orleans?
I think certainly. I think Mary Landrieu needs to be called out on who her friends are. We all are, you know, we're judged largely by the company we keep, and we see the company that Mary Landrieu wants to keep.
Well, here, let me jump in here, Jim, because here's the question. Joe Biden is Vice President of the United States. Barack Obama is the President of the United States. They were took the oath on Sunday and were inaugurated on Monday. And Louisiana is part of the United States of America. And I just think that Scott's attitude is beyond ridiculous. Joe Biden is the vice president. He's coming to Louisiana. I hate to remind people, but Louisiana has benefited from being part of the United States of America after Katrina, after God knows the BP thing and everything else. And so Joe Biden is not coming to New Orleans to do an anti-gun rally. He's coming to do a meet-and-greet event with Senator Landrieu. He's a respected national leader. And nobody has taken anybody's guns away. And I just think this is a very silly distraction. And I wish the Republican Party and Scott would get the facts straight, because I'm looking at the list of executive actions that the president has asked to do that I printed off the Fox News website, and nowhere in this list does it say take anybody's gun.
Well, this is not a state visit.
It says nominate an ATF director. It says provide first responders and school officials with proper training for active shooter situations. It says issue a presidential memorandum directing the Centers for Disease Control to research causes and prevention of gun violence.
But Melissa, this is not a state visit. This is a purely political visit intended only to load up Mary Landrieu's coffers, which I will point out, the address on the fundraising tickets lists a Washington, D.C. address. If Mary Landrieu is so in tune with Louisiana, why is all her fundraising dollars going back to a D.C. firm?
Well, Scott, you're a political consultant, and I guarantee you, if you looked at all the stuff that Governor Jindal and others have sent out over the years, you know, with their in Congress, sometimes they use a D.C. address. So, you know, let's just be clear about this. Joe Biden is vice president. We need to respect him. This is not about guns. And frankly, I'm just appalled at the response from you guys.
Again, I think the citizens have a right to know what's going on. If Joe Biden were coming here to dedicate a bridge or to have some governmental role, certainly he's more than welcome. But when it's a purely political event for our only, by the way, only Democrat statewide elected official, elected official, then I think the voters have a right to know that. And again, let's judge Mary by the company she keeps.
And I would like to invite anybody who's interested in participating in the Mary Landrieu fundraiser to look at her campaign website.
All right, and I suspect that Scott and others may be outside the Ritz-Carlton protesting. Will you be carrying signs, Scott?
I'm occupied that weekend.
Are you?
I am.
Here's a comment from Albert Samuels of Southern University. He says, Roger Villery's call for Mary Landrieu to cancel her fundraiser featuring Vice President Joe Biden would be laughable, except for the fact that he's apparently serious. Not only is it outrageous, it doesn't deserve the attention it's gotten. Should Karl Rove not be allowed to come to Louisiana to raise money for Bobby Jindal simply because Democrats don't like him? Absolutely not. Enough with this nonsense and more. Move on to more important issues.
Look, the point of the entire exercise is to show the incongruity between what Mary Landrieu says and what her policies show. She's got the most liberal, gun-grabbing, leftist politician she can find, short of Barack Obama, and she wants him to raise money for her.
297-5633. We will return with Scott Wilfong and Melissa Flournoy, and we will, of course, talk with them about many matters, but we'll be back in 90 seconds. Two nine seven 5633 is your number. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Melissa Flournoy, Chair of Louisiana Progress, and Scott Wilfong, the longtime Republican political consultant on opposite sides of many things, including a visit by the Vice President of the United States to New Orleans this Saturday to raise money for U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu, who is running for re-election, and the Republican Party chair, Roger Villery, is taking aim, literally, at the vice president's stand on gun control. The bigger issue, of course, is Senator Landrieu is seeking a fourth term. Melissa, do you think that the senator will be in good stead as she seeks another 6 years on Capitol Hill?
I think Mary Landrieu will get elected in 2014 because she's really been a great senator for Louisiana. She's really found the right balance and sort of meeting the needs of all of our citizens across the state. She's been responsive, and she's been effective. And frankly, I think we need to keep Mary, with her level of seniority and political skills and knowledge, representing us in Washington. And so I'm very encouraged. She's a scrappy politician. She's savvy. She builds strong relationships. And she's always managed to get elected by putting together a strong coalition across the state.
All right. Now, Barrington Neal, a fine attorney, writes to you, Scott. He says, do you think President Reagan and Justice Scalia are wackos? Reagan supported an assault weapons ban, and Justice Scalia found such a ban constitutional. Why is it different when a Democratic president tries to do the same thing?
Well, I don't think we're talking apples to apples here. I think the assault weapons ban that he's referring to was not at all the same thing that's being proposed now.
They're actually proposing the exact same legislation. That's the silliest thing
that's not
said yet.
That's not correct. It is not the same legislation. It goes much further. It actually is closer to what New York just passed, which is just short of an outright ban on semi-automatics altogether.
Question, Scott. If a senator or congressman proposed the exact same legislation that was passed in 1994 that Ronald Reagan supported and that Scalia upheld, would you support it?
If the exact same legislation was passed, no, I
if
don't.
If it was the exact same bill that was passed in 1994 and in effect through George Bush through 2004.
No,
Reagan supported and others had.
No, I didn't agree with 100% of everything that Ronald Reagan did, just like I'm sure you don't agree with 100% of everything Barack Obama did. I believe shall not be infringed means shall not be infringed. And I think Louisianians have shown that over the past couple of decades, especially last fall with the adoption of the constitutional amendment. And that's what we're really talking about here is what do Louisianians want? And a leftist liberal gun grabbing agenda is not what they want.
All right. Dorothy on Goodwood. Dorothy, you're on with Melissa and Scott.
I have a question for Scott. I think you're just bull hockeying around because do you recall when Mitt Romney came to Baton Rouge last summer and charged the outrageous sum of $50,000 a plate, which is more than the average Louisiana citizen makes per year? And you're crying about Joe Biden coming in for Mary Landrieu?
I do remember that, and sadly, those Louisianans who make $50,000 a year just saw increase on their income taxes and a reduction in their payroll paychecks every 2 weeks, thanks to President Obama and Joe Biden's attempt to raise taxes, which I'm sure we'll see more and more of. What Mitt Romney wanted was private money, and I don't, you know, if a rich person wants to pay $50,000, that's really none of my business.
Those taxes just went back to the Bush levels, though.
But the payroll tax just went up 2%.
It went back to the Bush level.
Sales taxes going up to 15% under Bobby Jindal.
So the bottom line was
Bobby Jindal's about to put the screws on working people in Louisiana, unlike anything we have ever seen.
But the promise was, I recall throughout the entire election last year, that taxes would not go up on those who made less than $250,000 a year. Yet my wife and my mother and my aunt all saw increase in taxes January 1st. And so, I think that needs an explanation for why one thing was said and another was done, because I know the working people of Louisiana who make $50,000 a year are taking home less pay today than they did at Christmas.
That's right, and that's because in the Republican compromise, they would not go along with the continued payroll tax deduction suspension. And the payroll tax piece is on the feet of Republicans. Don't try and put that on Obama.
So now now the Republicans have raised taxes.
The Republicans in the House and the Senate, and their fantasy fanaticism, have no concern whatsoever for working people. And I continue to be astonished by the people of Louisiana who do not understand what's in their economic interest.
Are you enthused about the governor's proposal, Scott?
I am. I think it needs, and I think like anything else, it probably needs a little tweaking. I'm a little concerned about the sales tax increase. I don't know that it's as necessary to go with the full 3 cents, but I do think when you look at the states that have eliminated income taxes, Tennessee, Florida, Nevada, places like that are booming, and I think it's no coincidence that that when you do that, high-income people, job creators, want to come to your state. So the idea behind it's great, and of course the devil's in the details, and we'll see in the session what gets changed and what doesn't. But overall, yes, I think it's a really it's an idea that like I said, the successful states are adopting. The dying states like New York, New Jersey, and all are sticking with their regressive high income taxes on their citizens.
Well, let's talk about property taxes, because all of those states that you mentioned, Texas particularly, have much higher property taxes. I guess I'm really concerned that, you know, we've relied on sales taxes in Louisiana at the local level to fund local government and schools and roads and everything else. And if we throw another 3 or 4 or 5 cent state sales tax, that every time those local taxes come up for renewal, people will vote no. And there's been no discussion about how to continue to fund local government, because Governor Jindal said he took property taxes off the table. And so how do you make up a $3 billion hit in a state budget that's already $1.2 billion out of balance with sales taxes? You know, I mean, people are going to have to pay 15% sales taxes. That doesn't work.
All right. Tom on Bluebonnet. Tom, you're on with Scott and Melissa. Excuse me. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I was kind of tickled. You know, it's really simple, whether it's the individual mandate or assault weapons ban. If our guy is for it, then we're for it. But if it's a Democrat that's for it, they're against it. It's real simple. I mean, I'm going to quote Calvin Trillium, if you allow me just a moment, from his fine book, Dogfight, Little Ditties About Politics. We hate it because it's his, lads. We hate it because it's his. We hate it because it's his, lads. That's what our hatred is. You needn't be a whiz, kids, to ace this simple quiz. We hate it because it's his, lads. We hate it because it's his.
All right. Well, I do think that both parties are guilty quite often of not giving enough credit to a good idea from the other side. Melissa, for example, what do you think about Governor Jindal's idea to sell birth control pills over the counter? Is that a good idea?
You know, I don't know. I haven't really done much research into it to look at it. My only concern is that then I'm afraid women wouldn't go to the doctor for their annual checkups if they didn't need to. And so, you know, I think there are some other implications in that. But generally speaking, I support access to contraception, and I'd love to dig a little deeper into what
so,
the implications
are. So your early read is that the governor has a good idea.
Yeah, and I'll spot him that one.
Okay, Scott, is that a good idea?
I think it is. You know, it's. I remember Miss. Was it Sandra Fluke or Sandra Flucker that said that if she had to purchase over the counter contraceptives, it would be cost prohibitive, somewhere around $1,000 a month. So I don't know if that was a statement about the proclivities of her personal life or what. But you know, hey, if it's something that can be got over the counter,
you're starting to sound like Rush Limbaugh. Why are you attacking this lady?
Wait a minute. I can't leave that shot unanswered. I have met Sandra Fluke. She was in Louisiana a couple of weeks ago. She is a lovely, poised young woman, and that is just a tacky, cheap shot. And I am so sick of this sexism and chauvinism and stupidity of white guys on issues around contraception.
She testified she couldn't afford it if she had to purchase prophylactic protection.
What does that have to do with her morals?
Well, it appears to me like that would be quite a lot of birth control, more than
Scott,
what the average person would need.
Scott,
I don't want to get into a discussion on that, but
generally,
I know, go home and talk to your wife, baby. Just go home and talk. Don't have your own little Todd Akin moment right here on the Jim Inkster show. Because, you know, I mean, here's the deal. You know, men need to talk to their wives, their partners, their girlfriends, or whoever, and be a little bit better informed about all this stuff before they start talking about issues that they don't understand.
I'm only saying that when it reaches the point where someone is asking me as a taxpayer to pay for their birth control because they can't afford enough of it to keep from getting pregnant, then there's a problem.
Listen.
Well, that's wrong, too. I'll agree with you there.
Let's go there. But anyway, I'm not here today to have that conversation. I want to switch back to guns because the thing that scares me is just in Baton Rouge earlier this week, there was a precious little toddler that got killed in a home accident in Baton Rouge. And there, you know, gun ownership is one thing, and gun safety is important. And if everybody's going to have a gun and a handgun and an assault weapon, please let's talk about gun safety and gun safety training. You know, let's talk about trigger locks. I mean, I was in the legislature literally 20 years ago and tried to pass a bill that when you sold a handgun, you had to sell a trigger lock with it, because one of my constituents in Shreveport's son had been killed in one of these home accidents with another child. And you would have thought that I had you know, burned the flag.
Philip in Ponchatoula. Philip, you're on the air. Good morning to you.
I was struck by that word that Scott used, wacko. I think that he and Mr. Villery and other radical Republican right-wingers should continue making their wacko remarks so that the party will, Tea Party, will go the way of the Whig Party.
Well, I continue to vote and vote your conscience, but I think the majority of Louisianians are more aligned with our way of thinking than the others.
297-5633, still time to talk with Scott and Alyssa. Dominic in Grand Coteau, please be brief. Hi, Dominic.
Good morning, all. Melissa, great job. Scott, I mean, echo the sentiments of the previous caller. Your why and your thoughts and y'all's party's politics are why Obama got a second term, and we're grateful for it. Keep it up. Thank you very much.
He didn't crack 40%.
Yeah, either. He did.
Yeah, he did crack 40% this time in Louisiana. We can only do what we can do. But I do want to mention one thing that Melissa brought up about guns, and that was a tragedy in Baton Rouge this week where the toddler was killed. But let's talk about this gentleman who accidentally shot him, was a convicted felon. What was he doing with a firearm? He broke a number of laws. So when we get back to the basic argument about firearm control, this man shouldn't have had a gun to begin with. So what laws are we going to pass that are going to stop him from getting that gun? He obviously didn't care about the laws that are already on the books. He's facing a prison term now for possession, simple possession of that firearm. It startles me that liberals think that they can just pass another law.
We can just say you were for gun registration and background checks on people buying guns.
No, I didn't say that.
No, I think you did. Oh, my God, I love this. That's how you keep guns out of the hands of felons.
Did we find out how he acquired this gun? It didn't matter how he got his hands on it. I can't believe that folks think that passing a law, like, for instance, a trigger lock law or a one more law, is somehow going to keep bad people from getting guns.
Listen, I don't want to debate that part of it, but I would like to talk about gun safety. You know, we reduced traffic deaths in this country by making seatbelts mandatory, okay? We've reduced drunk driving in this country by talking about responsible driving and responsible drinking. I really think we need to be talking about responsible gun ownership.
Mike in Port Allen. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Good morning to you.
Yes. Melissa, you keep him doing that Potomac two-step. I like when the Republicans' ideas jump all over the page and they don't even know where they are. But this is what I want to talk to Todd about. We had a young man who five people. Now, these are people at gun shows, people who are licensed to sell guns, who are supposed to be professionals in the firearm industry. Five people were shot at the gun show. And these people were supposed to be responsible individuals. I want Todd's comment.
All right.
Well, I know I'll be brief. First of all, none of these were in Louisiana. The shootings that occurred were not from federal firearms licensees at the shows. They were from people who attended. One gentleman opened a case with a loaded shotgun, and it went off. Yes, sadly, there are fools with firearms, and I do agree with Melissa. One thing she said, we do need to talk about responsible gun ownership, training, education, things like that that will teach people that, hey, every gun is loaded all the time, no matter what.
Melissa, final comments from you?
I am very excited to see Vice President Biden in New Orleans on Saturday. I think that we've got many, many sane people in Louisiana, and I just really appreciate the opportunity, Jim, to come on and talk about this, because the president and the vice president are not talking about taking anybody's guns.
All right, Scott, who's going to be the Republican candidate against Mary Landrieu?
That's kind of the $64,000 question, and the real answer to whether she gets reelected or not depends on the candidate. I know Congressman Cassidy has said he's running, but we haven't seen him actually
announce.
Could
you back Congressman Cassidy?
Oh, sure, absolutely. But I think we have a lot of good candidates, and that's what this year is going to be, is the shaking out of the
candidates. Well, we thank Scott, we thank Melissa, and thank you for listening. And for Richard Fisher, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.